Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Twitter has officially accepted Elon Musk's offer to buy the social media platform for $43 billion, and the liberal tears are flowing. Today, left-wing commentators and politicians alike are expressing their concern about Musk's free speech absolutism. Ooh, sounds so scary. And what it may mean for disinformation and hate speech. In reality, they're mourning the loss of control of a platform they had an iron grip on for years now and was a fountain of leftist propaganda. The latest on the fight for free speech is coming up here in tonight's Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. Ooh, it's a good week. It's a good month for America in so many ways. CNN Plus, down in flames, and now Twitter bought by Elon. It seems, more than anything else, to own the libs. Now, not that he's going to do anything that's unfair, not that Elon Musk's plan here is to do what the left has done to the right on Twitter for so many years now. No, it's just they won't be able to rig the game anymore. And this is from the Washington Post. On Twitter, in private messages and in interviews with the Washington Post, employees expressed fears about Musk's $44 billion takeover. Some tweeted tear-filled emojis and memes of people having emotional breakdowns. This is amazing. While others told the Post they were too in shock to speak. Can we just take a moment here? The richest man in the world, who is at least a entrepreneurial and managerial genius. I mean, that is fair to say, right? He put spaceships out there faster, rockets out in space faster than NASA, and is also single-handedly transforming the global car market by building Tesla into the behemoth that it is. And if you're a lib, shouldn't you be so excited about this? The guy is doing more. Think about this. I don't believe that climate change is an existential threat because I'm not looking for a religion replacement as some sad leftist, But if I did believe that, I would think that Elon Musk was the greatest person alive today, because Tesla and the technologies involved in Tesla are doing more to fight against existential climate change than any other person, technology company on the planet. But they hate him because he's buying Twitter and is going to allow there to be some actual free speech going on with this free speech platform. What's the big deal? Well, now you're going to start to see what the left really thinks about all of this. Here is The View, which I say this almost with a begrudging respect. There's a lot of bad political commentary out there. I think The View might be the dumbest show on television, maybe period, but certainly in politics. It's remarkable how much stupidity they're able to fit into one program. Here is The View's Sonny Hostin saying that when Elon Musk talks about freedom of speech, he means it for a very specific group. Watch.
And in fact, on Twitter, it is predominantly straight white men. So when Elon Musk says, wow, this is about free speech, it seems to me that it's about free speech of straight white men. And so let them have it. Let them just go at it. I enjoy the block button on Twitter. I think it has a real outsized influence in our world because politicians and celebrities are on it.
He means straight, or rather, he means freedom of speech for straight white men. No, no. He actually means, because the concept of freedom of speech is that people, human beings, of all colors, of all backgrounds, ethnicities, sexual orientations, genders, you name it, everybody should be able to share their thoughts without some ideologue crushing the thought for wrong think. No, you are not allowed to think that thing. And let's take a moment here to remember, what are some of the areas of so-called disinformation that Twitter has been aggressively policing for quite some time now? Well, mask mandates, for example, where they've gone after me, which they were wrong about. Mask mandates did not work. All of the data very clearly shows this. But that used to get you suspended, throttled, perhaps even banned. Questioning how effective the vaccines are. Kamala Harris, the vice president, got four shots. And she has COVID right now. That's how effective this vaccine is. You get your fourth shot, still can get COVID. Oh, but it kept me from going to the hospital. The chance of going to the hospital is very, very slim overall in general from COVID. But here we are, not allowed to say it. Not allowed to say it. And then, of course, the Hunter Biden laptop, they said that was Russian disinformation. They shut down the sharing of it. That was all, of course, a lie. So they're the ones who have a lot of explaining to. The left are the ones that have to explain why is it that they think they can oppose free speech without being held to account for being censors and authoritarian. Brian Stelter, meanwhile, is trying to take a more technocratic look at this. Because somehow the guy who is the self-made richest man on the planet by building very successful companies can't handle the complexities, Stelter thinks, of content moderation and hate speech. Watch.
He's all about freedom of speech. The question is, how do you balance that with regulating hate speech and misinformation?
And I think he's about to experience an extraordinary education in the complexities of that very topic. Elon Musk has pursued this. People thought maybe he's just buying it as a plaything, didn't know how serious he was. Now he's obviously very serious. He's committed his capital to it. He wants to build this business. But I don't think he has, based on his public statements, it's clear he has a very little understanding of the complexities that go into content moderation and hate speech policies and the like.
Really? He can't handle the complexities of hate speech? Who can? I wonder, who do they think can? Oh, Democrats who are using it for political purposes. That's, you know, if you say you don't want an open border, if you say that illegal immigration is bad for the country, that's hate speech. Of course, that's what they'll tell you because they're completely, absolutely bereft of principle. These people are nuts. Speaking of people who are bonkers, Jen Psaki letting us know that Biden is concerned about the harms that Elon Musk's, this private citizen, not in public office, I mean, obviously he's a famous public figure, but this citizen of this country who is buying a company is a concern to the White House? Watch.
Well, I'm not going to comment on a specific transaction. What I can tell you as a general matter, no matter who owns or runs Twitter, the president has long been concerned about the power of large social media platforms, the power they have over our everyday lives, has long argued that tech platforms must be held accountable for the harms they cause. He's been a strong supporter of fundamental reforms to achieve that goal, including reforms to Section 230, enacting antitrust reforms, requiring more transparency, and more. And he's encouraged that there's bipartisan interest in Congress. In terms of what hypothetical policies might happen, I'm just not going to speak to that at this point.
But why is she talking about all this right now? Well, obviously because of Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter. So you know what this is. This is the beginning of the, hey, maybe we can try to do something with government regulation to get back the monopoly on speech the left was able to exercise when it wanted to. To be very clear, they didn't all the time. I'm on Twitter. There are people who are on Twitter on the right, to be sure, but right before an election or on the most important issue of the last 2 years, COVID, not allowed to have free speech. Not allowed to have free speech. You can have free speech about, I hate this member of Congress, this person stinks, or whatever, but you can't have free speech on the biggest, most important public policy measure of the last 2 years. What does that mean? Elizabeth Warren, who is just a laughable fraud to anybody who has any sense of judgment or decency, said this in a tweet. This deal is dangerous for our democracy. Billionaires like Elon Musk play by a different set of rules than everyone else, accumulating power for their own gain. We need a wealth tax and strong rules to hold big tech accountable. What does that even mean? Hold them accountable how? They've been suppressing people and shadow banning people for years. Oh, but that was fine because they were doing it to the right, as we all know. DeSantis, by the way, saying that over the last 5 to 6 years, big tech companies have become enforcers of the narrative. Watch.
You have some of these legacy media outlets in D.C. and New York saying that this is such a bad thing because Musk believes in free speech. But it shows you what they've used these tech platforms to do. When these platforms first came on the scene, they billed themselves as being open platforms, as letting people share ideas. Indeed, they were used to go around a lot of those failed legacy media outlets like NBC and CNN that nobody trusts anymore. And yet it seems like over the last 5 or 6 years, these big tech companies, including Twitter, have gone from being open platforms to being enforcers of the narrative. And if you dissent from that narrative, you can be silenced.
It's all true, folks. But it might be coming to an end, at least on Twitter. We'll have more on the meltdown from the libs over Elon's acquisition of Twitter with Heritage Foundation research fellow and former Facebook employee Kara Frederick in a moment. Let's talk about protecting your home. Look, you know me. I'm not somebody that gets all fired up about something if it's not a real concern. But guess what? Cyber thieves can actually steal your home. It's called home title theft. I talked to a notary about it once. She said, yeah, it's actually really easy. Some cyber criminal forges your name off the title of your home online, pretends they're the owner, takes out loans, runs up a huge debt. You get stuck with the payments. That's how this actually goes. You're not covered by homeowners insurance or common identity theft program. Home Title Lock is what you need. They've earned my trust. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with your home's title, they mobilize to help shut it down. Here's what I urge you to do. First of all, go to HomeTitleLock.com and read the testimonials there from FBI agents, government officials, people who know this problem well. And then register your home address to see if you're already a victim. Don't even know it. This is the way to do it, friends. HomeTitleLock.com. Again, HomeTitleLock.com. We'll be right back.
You own all of Twitter or Facebook or what have you. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't even have to be transparent. You could secretly ban one party's candidate or all of its candidates, all of its nominees, or you could just secretly turn down the reach of their stuff and turn up the reach of something else, and the rest of us might not even find out about it till after the election. Elon Musk says this is all to help people because he is just a free speech, philosophically clear, open-minded helper.
What an amazing lack of self-awareness. MSNBC host Ari Melber describing how he's very concerned what might happen with Twitter in the hands of Elon Musk. I think it's time to remind MSNBC and all the other leftists out there that conservatives have been already for years shadow banned and purged. Trump himself, when he was president, was kicked off of the platform. Remember that? Yeah, the president of the United States. Now, the left and the MSM, who mocked conservatives for a long time for speaking out against Twitter censorship and, honestly, the rigged game, They're crying over the Musk takeover. You do love to see it, don't you? Here with Reaction Research Fellow for Technology at the Heritage Foundation, former Facebook employee, so she knows all about this stuff, Kara Frederick. Kara, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So now, I really just want to know this for my own reasons. You worked at Facebook, so you understand the culture of these places. It's very similar, I'm sure, in a lot of ways. Certainly the personnel are very similar to what you'd get at Twitter. Are we exaggerating when we see these, or rather, is it exaggerated when we see these stories of employees of Twitter who are crying and who are essentially having mental breakdowns privately and publicly in the office, outside the office, because Elon Musk, the richest man in the world and an incredible entrepreneur, has bought their company for over the market price? Like, is that really happening?
Yeah, I believe it. You know, I was at Facebook headquarters when Trump got elected in 2016, and the day after, it was like a funeral in that place. So I absolutely believe that somebody who says that he comes to promote free speech, who says that he believes free speech is a societal imperative and the bedrock of a functioning democracy, I could totally understand if employees were melting down. They're doing it in a public way on Twitter anyway. So I'm sure the halls of Twitter at this point in San Francisco are just flooded with tears. Politico had a recent report where the chief architect of some of the disinformation and misinformation and content moderation policies broke down when she was talking about the future of the company now that Elon has taken over. If you remember, she went on Joe Rogan with Jack Dorsey, and she talked all about how they were going to cut down on hate speech. We all know what hate speech actually means, right? Disinformation. We know what disinformation means now. So I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is very problematic, to use their terms, for these employees.
Yeah, there are a number of libs who are not handling this well. A dozen people or so. Here's just a mashup of some who have deactivated their accounts. Look at this.
Well, it looks like Twitter's gone. They accepted the money, and Elon Stalin is taking over. So f*** you, Twitter, and goodbye forever.
Elon Musk, this is directly to you. Enjoy Twitter. I just deactivated mine. I will not be reactivating it. Enjoy.
I deactivated my account and deleted the app. That's what I think of it. F*** Elon Musk.
Today, Twitter has announced that they've been bought by Elon Musk, or however you say his name. I'm not interested in staying on Twitter anymore because of this, and I think there's a lot of people that are about to leave.
Hey, I did a thing today. I deactivated my Twitter account. You can too.
I mean, you get the idea. We can sit here all day and just look at all these people saying that they're so upset about this. It is interesting. This is really in response to free speech. Elon Musk hasn't come in. I would understand at some level, Kara, if Elon Musk said, I'm going to do to the left what they have done for years to the right on these social media platforms, including at Facebook, by the way, as you well know. And instead, he's just like, no, we're just going to have actual free speech principles, and leftists are completely losing their minds.
Exactly. And good riddance to them. You know, if this doesn't expose these people as the censors and the ideologues that they are, I don't know what will. I've seen comparisons. Those were pretty mild from what I've seen. I've seen comparisons to apartheid. I've seen comparisons to the dawn of World War II. I've seen comparisons to a World War III on the horizon because Elon is taking over. And it's exactly as you said. He hasn't come in and said, all right, libs, you are going to get a taste of your own medicine. Not in the slightest. He's basically just said that free speech matters, that we are going to work within the bounds of the law to preserve free speech. We're going to have a genuine exchange of ideas on this platform because it's again, that societal imperative for a functioning democracy. And that's it. He wants to open source the algorithm. Are they scared of transparency? Oh, funny that leftists are suddenly freaked out by uncovering some of the potential dirty deeds that they've been doing on these platforms. To me, it just speaks volumes to show that how much they have stacked the deck in their favor when it comes to this platform. That's all they're is to it.
Do you think that this is going to have major effect, that Twitter's takeover by by Elon Musk is going to have impact beyond just that platform? I mean, is Facebook going to look at this and say, we don't want to be the platform that is so obviously throttling the right when they actually now have a free space where they can go with real reach? I mean, do you think that that's going to matter?
I would hope so. I think that might be a bridge too far at this point. My understanding, especially with Google, who owns YouTube, they just rolled out their more inclusive nudges for their Google Docs. I think some of these companies are going to double down. But what's really important, if you at least have one outlier in Twitter now, is that this could break the ideological monopoly that these companies have. Because it's important for your users to understand that these companies act in concert. Even if they're not directly communicating with each other, which, and many times they are, but even if they're not, they're looking to the other big tech companies to see what they do. Remember when Twitter took down, permanently banned Donald Trump, other companies looked to them and they were like, okay, maybe this is an example we should follow. Google, Apple, AWS all banned Parler at the same time, effectively destroying it at its moment, at its peak of user growth. So these companies are always sort of looking for the green light from each other. If you have one company stand up, I do think it makes the dominoes less apt to fall as quickly as they have in the past. So that's one good thing.
Jack Dorsey tweeted this out, the founder of Twitter, right? Elon's goal of creating a platform that is maximally trusted and broadly inclusive is the right one. This is also Parag's goal and why I chose him. Thank you for both for getting the company out of an impossible situation. This is the right path. I believe it with all my heart. Jack Dorsey does seem like less of a doctrinaire leftist than some of the others involved. I mean, his speaking to the current CEO has basically said, no, we don't want marginalized people or whatever, leftists, you name it, to feel bad on the platform, right? That's actually not a free speech principle. But do you think that Dorsey overall here is his view going to become dominant inside of Twitter, that this is okay, that what Elon's doing is a good thing? Or are you going to have mass resignations? And, you know, a lot of people are talking tough right now about how they're going to leave their job in social cohesion or whatever. I mean, again, you've worked these places, I haven't. They have ridiculous job titles for some of these folks. Or do you think they're going to stay?
You know, I think Jack's instincts are good, and they always have been good, but he's been run roughshod by some of his employees, including the woman who was weeping openly at this Twitter meeting recently, according to that Politico reporting. So I think that what he wanted, and he's a technologist at heart, right? He's an engineer. He wants solutions. He wants technical fixes. So I think that people within the company who have that technical remit are probably pretty excited about these changes, open sourcing the algorithm. That's the ethos of a lot of the programmers in Silicon Valley who are working for these companies. They want to noodle on tough problems and find solutions. So that is what Jack represents. He just got overruled by some of these more administrative types that you talked about earlier. So I think the more administrative types, they can probably leave the company, you know, if it's lucrative for them to not be there anymore. So that's a good thing. I think the engineers hopefully will win the day if they actually just care about their mission, and that's solving problems and finding the technical solutions. So they'll be happy about it. The ones who form the administrative HR-esque sort of roles, product manager roles, the roles that you talked about that sound made up, I think those guys are going to be angry. We'll see what happens when it comes to their bottom lines.
I feel like there are plenty of people that if you could have a role, couple of hundred grand, $200,000-$300,000 for monitoring conversational health, I know some conservatives that be willing to step in there now to help out. So, you know, anyway, Kara, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Good to see you too, Buck.
Russia once again warning the U.S. that nuclear war could be on the horizon if it continues to supply weapons to Ukrainian armed forces. Are these just words from the cornered Russian bear, or should we actually start to worry about this? Senior fellow at the America First Policy Institute, Steve Yates, gives his analysis when we come back. Let's talk about protecting your online data, which is critical, because companies say, oh, they've got your back. They're going to keep your stuff secure. That's not true. That's why you need Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com and use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line.
Command forces have been attrited in a very significant way. Casualties are pretty substantial. They've lost a lot of equipment. They've used a lot of precision-guided munitions. They've lost a major surface combatant. And so they are, in fact, in terms of military capability, weaker than when it started. You know, John, it'll be harder for them to replace some of this capability as they go forward because of the sanctions and the trade restrictions that have been placed on them.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said earlier today the war in Ukraine has already weakened Russia's military capability. This comes as Russia tells the U.S. to stop sending more aid to Ukraine, warning that large Western deliveries of weapons were inflaming the conflict and the threat of a nuclear war was very significant. Joining me now to discuss all this, the real risks behind Russia's words, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute, Steve Yates. My friend Steve, good to see you.
Thank you, Buck. A pleasure to join you.
I haven't had a chance to talk to you in a little while about the situation in Ukraine, Stephen. What do you think? I mean, it feels like there's this narrative that, Russia didn't get what it wanted, and so Ukraine is winning. Meanwhile, there are Ukrainian cities that are still smoldering from being destroyed, and Russia's war continues. So what do you make of where we are right now?
I don't really think there have been any winners so far in this, in the sense that it's been very, very impressive that the Ukrainian people and their leadership have stood up, have weathered the initial phase of this storm, of this amp up of Russia's invasion of their territory, but they have paid a heavy price. So, you know, when you have had millions of your citizens flee the country, you've had probably not accurately counted number of casualties and wounded, and you've had a lot of property damage, other kinds of things happen, Ukraine's definitely suffered. However, I think that prior to this invasion, Russia had a reputation for walking 10 feet tall, whether it was militarily or especially in the information, psychological, political warfare space. We had rumors in the United States that they'd allegedly were so good at this that they could steal a presidential election in 2016. And so I think one of the biggest surprises of this has been the Ukrainian leader's ability to win some of that information warfare space, to where most of the world pretty much is on Ukraine's side emotionally and wishes them the best against evil Putin and Russia.
And I wonder what you think of some of the recent commentary that's come out that the Biden administration, let me rephrase this if I can, Stephen. Are we getting slowly but surely more involved in this? I mean, do you have concerns about the U.S., taking a sort of incrementalist, interventionist approach here? Is that happening, or is that caution or are those concerns overblown right now?
Oh, I am concerned about that. I mean, in our trade, we basically call that mission creep, and it's something that has been very, very significant in recent American engagements. It was really only in the Trump administration where we had kind of a hit and pull back approach to some of our national security challenges, but especially when one looks at how things played out in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria in the previous administrations, getting in for a somewhat defined mission led to erosion and kind of creeping into long-term entanglements that were not in America's favor over time. And so I think there's a risk of that. There's no black and white proof that we have troops, special forces, or what have you in Ukraine right now. But I think it would be silly to imagine that's not talked about. I mean, after all, we had the president accidentally talk up to people about when you get there, this is what you will see. So that's been at least a nod of the head that could be coming if it wasn't an accidental disclosure of kind of classified information.
What do you think of the reports that Finland and Sweden are looking like they're going to join NATO?
Well, I think there's certainly going to be political and strategic consequences for Russia for the approach that they took. I think NATO has a lot of soul searching to do about what kind of an alliance it's going to be. I am one who thinks that it should be much more Europeans taking care of Europeans. And in that kind of a context, having a couple of more countries jump in on side because they want the deterrent of the NATO alliance is important. But it was actually an interesting lesson of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Ukraine's been left largely to defend itself because it's not a NATO member. That's actually upped the ante of getting others to want to be inside an alliance and not have to similarly stand alone.
Here's Rand Paul arguing to Blinken that Ukraine itself should never become a part of NATO. Watch this one.
Had they been or are they to become part of NATO, that means U.S. soldiers will be fighting in Ukraine, and that's something I very much oppose.
Senator, could I just say to that, because it's, look, these are important conversations and arguments. My judgment is different. If you look at the countries that Russia has attacked over the last years, Georgia, leaving forces in Transnistria and Moldova, and then repeatedly Ukraine, these were countries that were not part of NATO. It has not attacked NATO countries. For probably a very good reason.
You could also argue the countries they've attacked were part of Russia.
Well, that...
were part of the Soviet Union.
Yes, and I firmly disagree with that proposition. It is the fundamental right of these countries to decide their own future and their own destiny.
I mean, it seems to me like Blinken... We're in a war that in large part, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, but in large part, Putin's motivation here was to make sure that Ukraine never joins NATO. And the U.S. Secretary of State is seeming to argue that Ukraine should, in fact, join NATO at some point. Is that what's happening?
It does look like that is what's happening. And it's at least rhetorical mission creep on the part of the Biden administration. And again, the tripwire that Senator Paul is pointing to is automatic involvement of American forces. I mean, it's one thing if you have a NATO alliance or a European alliance where they are standing by their neighbors at some kind of collective security obligation. It should be a different matter altogether about whether America is standing toe-to-toe with another adversary because a third party has been attacked. We have those kinds of alliances with a few countries, but the American public is not really as well prepared to engage in that. And Europe is uniquely more capable of doing more of this itself. And so I think there's more to this than Secretary Blinken is letting on. It definitely was the case that saying that NATO membership was delayed or out off the cards may have deterred Putin's invasion. We can't know now because the genie's out of that bottle.
Stephen, how much longer do you think this goes on for? Where do you see this conflict going?
Sadly, it looks like this is going to be something that grinds on for some time. Takes two things for this kind of thing to come to an end in a meaningful way. And it both are distasteful in a sense. It takes the sort of yin and yang of hitting the adversary very hard so it knows that there are grave consequences to continue, but then offering some kind of olive branch or an off ramp towards peace. And there has to be a peacemaker willing and able to deliver it. President Biden doesn't seem to be that kind of a president. Absent leadership by the President of the United States, it's hard to see who's capable and willing to step in and do that, leaving, unfortunately, Ukrainian people to grind this out for some time.
Stephen Yates, always worthwhile, always wise, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Buck.
When we come back, a shocking story out of Washington, D.C. that flew under most people's radars. A climate activist died after self-immolation. He set himself on fire in front of the Supreme Court building. My God. First TV's Morgan Zegers joins us to explain how climate extremism seems to be on the rise across America. Stay with us. April 22nd, otherwise known as Earth Day, is a day widely observed by environmentalists around the world. To celebrate, some people refrain from driving their car for the day. Others walk around their neighborhood and pick up litter. Some, oh my God, douse themselves in gasoline and light themselves on fire. This actually happened. That's what occurred last week when climate activist Wynn Bruce set himself ablaze on the steps of the Supreme Court building in D.C., hoping to shine a light on the losing fight against climate change, an act that some fellow activists described as heroic. Self-immolation on the steps of the Capitol. I mean, wow. Morgan Zegers founder of Young Americans Against Socialism, believes we should expect to see more of this extremism when it comes to climate belief systems in the near future. She joins me now. Morgan, first off, I cannot, when was the last time, I mean, if you don't know, I don't know. I can't remember the last time somebody lit themselves on fire on the steps of the United States Supreme Court. It's been a long time for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard of anything happening in this way, and I've never experienced such a strange political act happen, at least while I've been involved. And what's even more disturbing to me is the fact that nobody is saying, you know, it's good to be passionate, but you probably shouldn't do that. Instead, these crazy radical leftist activists are praising him and saying what a great self-sacrifice this was in the name of climate change.
Well, I mean, what is, by the way, isn't it remarkable? Because here's the thing. This person did this, and it's incredibly sad. I mean, no one should ever do this. This person did this, though, this climate activist, and obviously it was to raise awareness of this at some level, right? That's why the self-immolation, and people think back to, there was self-immolation of monks in Southeast Asia around the time of the Vietnam War, right? I mean, this is something that, it's very uncommon for this to happen, but it does happen. And it's to raise people's attention to an issue. But why didn't the left then, Morgan, cover this top to bottom? Why wasn't this a major national news story?
I honestly have absolutely no idea. My big concern, though, here is that this was generally supported by them. If you look at the really radical communication on platforms like Twitter, which has been in the news for the Elon Musk story, a lot of people are saying things along the lines of, well, we're all committing suicide because we're all damaging planet Earth. But he just did it in a moment of reflection and made a grander choice to do it in the name of activism. And so he deserves to be praised for that. And I think it's really dangerous. I mean, Buck, when we connect the dots on all of this, they've been telling us that the world's going to end for 10 years, or in 10 years, for quite some time now. They've been taking our children out of school and telling them to go to climate change rallies on Fridays, specifically to advocate for their radical things like the Green New Deal. And then when you trace back the origins of all of this activism and actually look at the legislation they're trying to push on us, telling us if we don't pass it, the world's going to end, you find out things like AOC's chief of staff, who helped her write the Green New Deal, admitted they wrote it as an economic transformation for the country out of capitalism, into socialism, into government control of the economy, all in the name of climate change. But they only made it as an economic transformation, first, Buck. He admits, AOC's chief of staff admits they made it as the economic transformation plan and then decided to add in a little sprinkle of climate change.
There's certainly no shortage of hysteria on this issue being pushed from the absolute top level of the government. I mean, here is the president, Joe Biden, who, how of sound mind he is at any given time is a very debatable question, but he is the president. He's technically, as the American president, leader of the free world, at least we used to call it that. Here he is pushing the idea that, Morgan, we are running out of time when it comes to climate change.
Climate change is already ravaging the world. We've heard from many speakers. It's not hypothetical. It's not a hypothetical threat. It's destroying people's lives and livelihoods and doing it every single day. It's costing our nations trillions of dollars. Record heat and drought, fueling more widespread and more intense wildfires in some places and crop failures in others. Record flooding and what used to be a once-in-a-century storms are now happening every few years.
I mean, it's just, it's like a tornado of blather and bullcrap. It really, I mean, record flooding compared to what and when? And, you know, there's word of a big flood that even happened in the Bible, right? I mean, floods have been around a long time, everybody. They're a whole, oh my, I have to just center myself with, how can they be so crazy and think that they're sane? That's what I really want you to address for me now.
Well, Buck, you actually are hitting the nail on the head right now. They aren't just crazy with one issue. It's not like they just became crazy about COVID and all of a sudden were able to be indoctrinated about masks. It's not just that they were believing that their protests that lit buildings on fire and had people abused and killed in their BLM protests from 2020 and on. Those were peaceful, apparently. And now you have the same kind of mentality. I mean, look at the failures of Afghanistan. Look at the failures of COVID-19 and the mandates that they've put down on to us. It's tyrannical, it makes no sense, and it's completely anti-science. Every time they try and tell us that it's pro-democracy and pro-science, and they're shoving it down our throats. So my big concern is that these people can't handle any serious issues, and now they're telling us that the biggest issue of our lifetime, climate change, that could lead to the end of the planet, must be tackled now that things are settling down with COVID-19. Now, if you remember, Project Veritas had the release of a story come out where they caught footage of CNN explaining the next big story was going to be climate change because COVID was winding down and they needed to build up new hysteria about something else. And we're also seeing that just in the increase in communication from the radical left, like AOC and the Squad, they're kind of shifting focus back to climate change. And so my question is, if they were willing to do what they did to us and to our families and our children and our country and the world over the last 2 years for a virus that had a 99% survival rate, what the heck are they going to do to us for something they think, they claim, is going to end the world in less than 10 years? I mean, you gotta wonder.
Well, I mean, John Kerry clearly thinks this is a big problem. He understands climate change as a guy who only flies private and has many very large houses and a yacht that he actually moves the state registration on to avoid taxes to the absolute maximum he can. Here he is telling everybody that if we start fighting climate change, the whole world's just going to get so much better. Watch.
Every single economic analysis that is a serious economic analysis that has been peer-reviewed and put out over the last 15, 20 years documents that it is far, far more expensive to not respond to climate than it is to respond. We can have a healthier planet, a cleaner planet, a more secure planet, if we do the things that are on the table to have clean energy.
I mean, a healthier planet? Like, the planet isn't sitting on your couch eating potato chips hanging out with you. Like, this notion of the planet as, like, our buddy Bill, and we just need to make sure he gets to the doctor for his checkup. What is wrong with these people? Like, I'm actually sitting, I don't even know what kind of questions to ask you other than, are they really this crazy? Like, does John Kerry actually believe this?
I mean, I honestly, I don't know what these people at the top think. I honestly think that they feel better by advocating for these issues. It kind of gives them a sense of purpose and a sense of control when they can do these higher up, better than thou, holier than thou issues and tell the little people like the farmers and the country people and the conservatives that actually live out in nature, explore the outdoors and keep all of the farmland and animals moving and pushing forward in this economy in a honestly a wholesome way compared to what the city people do to their environment. I went to New York City once, no offense, Buck, I know you're from there, but there was just garbage bags lining the streets. It's cluttered, it's disgusting, it smells bad. And then they have the courage to tell someone like me, AOC, a city girl, tells a country girl like me that I don't care about the planet just because I'm conservative. And so none of their talking points make sense. But I think we are seeing a revival of what it means to be conservative and what it means to be an environmentalist and an outdoorsman. We have been silent for too long, and so you're going to see a lot more rural people speak up about this. I know a lot of girls on Instagram that have ranches that own cattle and sell that, and that's how they make their living, and they're starting to speak out, especially after that New York Times article that said, meet the people killing the planet, and it was all about ranchers and farmers. It's disgusting.
Indeed. Morgan, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Buck.
White House spokesperson Jen Psaki offers an absurd explanation as to why migrants continue to flood over the border. We'll have that story for you coming up in Quick Hits. Stay with us. A BBC reporter makes it clear he doesn't know his firearms, that's for sure, and a strange phenomenon took place on Twitter today. Let's dive into it. Those stories on Quick Hits. This was awesome. BBC reporter Padraig Belton is complaining about firearms in U.S. stores. This was in a tweet. Hi from America, where Walmart doesn't have a plug adapter for my UK laptop. But on the other hand, I can buy a rifle and ammunition. What's awesome about this is that the photo is of a Daisy BB gun and a Crossman BB gun, as you can see there. Because, yeah, you can, in fact, buy BB guns at Walmart. That is a real thing. This guy, now, there are places where you can obviously go in and buy guns too, but it's kind of funny that he doesn't know the difference, doesn't care to know the difference. Yep, that's a real thing. Oh, I also appreciated the tweet from the Daily Wire's Matt Walsh showing a plastic toy grenade that they were selling in Walmart, which I think was like a water grenade, but, you know, technically selling grenades, I guess. Here's a graphic, by the way, because people are saying, oh, is it real? Is it real, the gains, the follower gains? Over the last 24 hours, we did a little bit of a deep dive into this. Check this out. I got 11,000 new followers plus over the last 24 hours. My man Jesse Kelly, also on the first, plus 8,000. Fox News, 69,000. Gutfeld, 22,000. New York Post, 11,000. Dinesh D'Souza, 41,000. Hillary Clinton, down 17. Don Lemon, down 4,000. Brian Stelter, down 1,700. You see this? Don Lemon. Oh, I already said Don Lemon. There you go. It's almost like something's going on, folks. Almost like maybe they've actually been lying to you this whole time about how they're not doing anything to hurt right-wing commentary and to pretend like it's, you know, unpopular or they're censoring or no. They're doing all that stuff and more. They're absolutely horrible. Libs are terrible. This is the problem, right? Some of them can be decent people, but if they believe enough of this stuff, really hard to be, you know, whenever someone says, oh, my friend is a Democrat, or, you know, my dad or my sister or whatever is a Democrat, well, it's like, okay, well, what kind of Democrat, though? Is it a Democrat who doesn't realize that the Democrat Party's completely lost its mind? Because that I can understand. You'd still be a Democrat. But if you really believe all this stuff, if you're a true leftist, really? I think it's fun to live in this delusion. I think it's probably a bad idea, personally. But that's just me. Speaking of left-wing delusion, Jen Psaki, who is the really chief of delusion creation for this White House, which, as we all know, is a complete mess. It's under siege. It's awful. It's under siege from its own incompetence, to be clear about that. Here's Jen Psaki blaming, speaking of incompetence, Donald Trump for the border crisis, claims that Joe Biden is actually smarter and more effective on the border. Watch.
I would just say, if we just dial it back a few years to kind of what we inherited here, the former president invested billions of dollars in a border wall that was never going to work or be effective. Instead of working towards comprehensive immigration reform, as part of the president's proposal he put forward on his first day in office, he proposed investing in smarter security at the border, something he'd be happy to work with governors on, and certainly we're open to having that conversation whenever they're ready to do that.
Smarter security. How about stopping illegals from crossing in the United States? They never actually say that's what they want to do. That's the problem. People are breaking our laws coming to the country, but serious damage to the country from unserious intellectually people in the Biden White House. That's what we face. That's what we're up against. And that's it for tonight's Hold the Line. Hope you enjoyed it. No Spin News with Mr. Bill O'Reilly is next. Yield time.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The Foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right.
Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.